Hello, you lovely lot. I wanted to take a moment to share an exciting announcement with you all. I will be doing a live show for Happy Mum, Happy Baby at the Podcast Show in London on the 22nd of May. This will be a live episode of this very podcast featuring me and a very special, soon to be announced, guest. Get ready for a candid conversation, unfiltered truths, laughs, invaluable non-judgmental advice, and lived experiences. Dive into the complexities of parenting while juggling work, relationships, and personal growth. And we'll be talking beyond the baby years. As well as the live episode, the show will also include a Q&A with both me and my guest. Tickets go on sale this Friday the 26th of April at 10 a.m, but anyone who is part of the Happy Mum Happy Baby newsletter will be getting early access to tickets on Wednesday the 24th of April at 10 a.m. To sign up to the newsletter and for more information about the event, please head to happymumhappybaby.com/events. I can't wait to see you there.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. It is a special. We are between series right now. However, one of my favourite children's authors, I love reading books to my kids. He is doing a special project with Apple, Apple TV, for an original adaptation of one of his books. And I heard he was available and I jumped at the chance to talk to him. It is the amazing Oliver Jeffers.
Thank you. Hello, how are you doing? I think everybody's available at the minute. What is anybody else doing?
I know.
We're all stuck
when
at home.
When you ask someone if they're available and they don't say, and they say, no, I'm busy, you're like, really?
Well, I suppose I actually haven't had a chance to stop and think for myself. We're in lockdown with two small kids, so I understand every parent out there who's trying to homeschool and do any kind of a job and keep the house in order. It's a tall order, really.
Well, because you're normally in New York.
Yes, we're normally in New York, yeah. We were about halfway through a year of travel when all of this started to go down, and we read the writing on the wall and we retreated back to Belfast to be closer to family, ironically, because we can't actually see anybody. We've been here for 6 weeks and we haven't been able to see anybody.
That must be so weird, because usually you're used to not seeing them because you live in America,
yeah.
But now you're around the corner from them and you still can't see each other.
Yeah, yeah. It makes it all the more frustrating, really, just because everybody's right there and you want to, but you can't.
Now you just get cheaper calls.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah. But people have it worse, so we're not complaining.
That's very true. So at the moment, you are doing a bit of promo because one of your books, Here We Are, it has been adapted for TV. So talk to me, first of all, a little bit about that, because it's been voiced by Meryl Streep and Chris O'Dowd.
Yep, that's true. The book came out maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I don't even know what year it is right now. And it was a book that was written for my son. That was him just sneaking in the room there a second ago. He's sitting over in the sofa. I had been talking to Studio AK about an adaptation project, and we were discussing other things, and then this book came out and Philip, the director, saw it and said that this should take priority over anything else. And we didn't quite know what we were going to do and who with at that point. But right around then, Apple came knocking, showing a lot of interest, and Studio AK presented this project. And the timing seemed great because it was coming up to the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. And this is obviously got a very strong moral message towards social and environmental responsibility. And so it seemed like a wonderful project just for the simple reasons of Earth Day. None of us, of course, realizing how timely and relevant it would be as a message for people feeling a little lost and frustrated and stuck at home in a large and scary world.
Mm. It feels really important to have it out there now.
Mm, it does, yeah. And the simple realization that you're not alone. And I think everybody is reevaluating the things that they prioritize of most importance in their life. And, you know, something in a world where people have been sprinting very hard and running as fast as they can and consuming as much as they can just by default, it turns out that some of the things that we actually cherish the most are close at hand, which is our relationship with other people.
Mm. What was your childhood like? Because it's funny now talking to you. I imagine you grew up in Belfast.
I did, yeah.
And here you are now back in Belfast.
I can actually see probably across the loch there, the house that I grew up in, if I had a pair of binoculars. I had a lovely upbringing. Despite all the political troubles here, my parents raised me and my three brothers with as much normality as possible. They always encouraged us to travel. They never placed great stock on either side of the political divide. And my dad's an educator, and he's always said that the surest sign of intelligence in other people is curiosity. You know, those who remember lots of facts are only proving that they've got a good memory, not that they're actually intelligent. And so it's attitudes like that and little lessons like that that were always important to us. And we were encouraged to be curious and go out and see the world. And that was the atmosphere in our household. It was great. We would go out and play in the street. We would go out and play football. We went to one of the first integrated schools in Northern Ireland that had both Catholics and Protestants that went to it, which felt strange to explain whenever I was living in New York to an intern who was in the studio who grew up in rural Alabama. That integrated here meant something very different to integration there. And just how small and petty these problems that people had put so much stock in for years, whenever you leave and you realize how little anybody else cares, it just seems like such a massive waste of energy. But Belfast has always been home to such wonderful people and great storytellers. And geographically, it's a beautiful city. And the culture has always been rich. And the people know how to tell a story and crack a joke. Mm.
Well, you had a love of storytelling even from a young age.
Yeah, I did. Always have. And that mostly came through in the form of making art, of making pictures, and those pictures attempting to tell a story. And I didn't quite realize that I was making stories until quite far down the line.
And I imagine it was quite a loud house to grow up in as well. I've got three boys. And the noise, there's a lot of noise.
Yeah, there was. Somebody once ventured that perhaps the reason that all of my books are about a lonely child in a very empty world is perhaps my fantasy of what was missing in my own life.
And did you ever think about having your own children and what that would look like?
Obviously, I'd always thought that might happen at some point. Never really spent too long wondering what it would look like in advance. And of course, my granny always said, you know, when my wife was due to give birth to this one behind me here, she's like, "Do you feel ready?" And I was like, "Not at all." And she goes, "Nobody's ever ready."
It's so true. You can read all the books you like, you can do all the forward planning, but actually, you don't know what it's going to be like.
She had 8 kids and something like 24 grandkids and 29 great grandkids, and so she knew what she was talking about.
Very true. And you were already living in America because you and your wife, you've been together, were you childhood sweethearts?
In our early 20s, and so we've been living together in New York for coming up with 15 years now. We met here and then we went there together. Almost 15 years.
And did you ever think about where you would bring up kids, or was it a case of you were settled there? And
No, I don't. Interesting question, because for the last couple of years in America, it's felt strange to be part of a system that we vehemently disagree with. But so it's been an open-ended question that we haven't quite resolved, still haven't quite resolved. But I think just as long as they feel steady and secure enough in the whatever environment that we have with us on the move, then we're okay with that. And we can probably get away with that for a little longer.
Moving around. What has it been like traveling around with them?
At certain points, we question our sanity. Because we were quite literally dragging two children, kicking and screaming across the world.
Where did you go?
We were in Europe from the middle of summer until just after Christmas, all over. And then we were in the Middle East for a little bit. And then we were in Japan for a while. And when we sort of read the situation and realized that we probably shouldn't get stuck in a country that we don't speak the language and have no chance of really understanding how to deal with an emergency scenario. And we came back. But so, yes, at times of it, we were, this is insane because we couldn't really, we were so limited in what we could do. But at other times, the most beautiful and magical moments were ones that could never have been planned and only happened because of their enthusiasm and naivety and inexperience and just sheer kind of joy of life.
Because that's a massive thing, isn't it? I think as parents, you kind of forward plan, you think, oh, I'm going to do this because it's going to be amazing and it's going to be so
brilliant. All of the magical moments were completely unscripted and completely just happened in the moment.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
And the moments you would have thought would have been lovely, like, look at this beautiful scenery. And
no, not even that. It was always unexpected. And it just had to, you had to allow yourself to be in the mindset for that to happen. And it just, you know, everybody's moods to align. And it worked out. And I think the more sort of flexible you are and less tied to a structure of how it might be, the more likely it is that that will happen.
You have to kind of adjust your expectations, don't you?
Yes. Or have zero.
Then anything is a bonus. So I'm going to take you back to actually the arrival of your son.
Yes.
How was that? What was that like?
Well, as I said, you know, my granny asked me, are you ready? And I said, no. And she goes, nobody ever is. So he was born in New York, and it's this very strange notion of you don't really get it until that they're there. And it's what struck me most was that new humans really, truly know nothing. And it's up to you to teach them everything. And in that attempt to explain everything and boil it down to the most simple basic steps, I realized that there was a lot that I had forgotten. And at that point in time, which was around, you know, second half of 2015, it felt like a lot of functioning adults in Western society had forgotten too, just that, you know, there was a lot of anger present at that time. And it, sometimes it takes for you to snap yourself out of that. It's a strange experience, but it's a magical one too. And, you know, for the first several months of their life, they don't understand a word you're saying. And so all the talking that you're doing is as much for your own benefit as it is for theirs. And that's no bad thing, though.
I can remember my father-in-law actually saying when, so my first son, Buzz, when he was first born, my father-in-law, who was a caretaker at the time, just kept saying to me, just talk to him, just say anything.
Yeah.
Because he'll just be absorbing it or taking little bits of it. And it doesn't actually matter what you say, as long as you are communicating.
Yep. And because they pick up on body language and tone and emotion much more succinctly than they do in the actual words, and actually probably much more succinctly than adults do, because they're mm-hmm. still sort of small and curious and very receptive to the mood and the tone.
Would you say that you had an instant bond, or would you say it was something that kind of grew as time went on?
Well, both. I mean, definitely both. But the instant bond that I had was more to the idea and to just a sheer respect and appreciation for my wife. And yeah, I think it is slightly harder for the father to get that kind of connection right off the bat, because there's, you know, there's that idea of the fourth trimester where there's not a lot happening outwardly. So it's hard to find anything to connect to or connect with. And nobody really points that out to you. But so it's like, I felt that my role was making sure that mama was happy and therefore he was happy. And it's when those little first facial expressions start to happen a couple of months down the road that it really, it kind of comes down with a thundering crash.
I think because there's always so much expectation on both sides for the mum and the dad to kind of feel something straight away. And actually, sometimes when that doesn't happen...
Yeah, and, like, talking to my friends, was like, for dads, it more often doesn't happen because it's just, it's this huge responsibility. And without, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, without any immediate emotional payback. And it's hard to just sort of wrap your head around what it is that you're supposed to feel. And because you're not feeling it because it's an intuitive thing, then there's a guilt that sets in. But I think that's quite natural because it does happen. And for everybody at their own pace.
Yeah. I think the more we talk about it, the better for people that kind of feel that and then feel that guilt. And then more and more kind of barriers go up. Whereas if you talk to someone about it and they go, oh yeah, I have the same.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Obviously, working on children's books, that's a huge part of what you do. Did you have a sense of what you would be like as a dad, and have you surprised yourself?
Not really, because I mean, I've always said that I've tried to refrain from calling my books children's books because I think that alienates people who aren't children. And there are plenty of people who are fans of my books who are not children or don't even have children. And in fact, I think some of the best books written on a number of subjects take the form of picture books, which is what I like to call them. And it's just like it's a topic boiled down to such economic simplicity that it can be enjoyed by anyone. I didn't have an expectation, and I don't try to place it on myself because it's different by different moods and by different days. And the funny thing is that my wife is actually much better at doing, you know, like arts and crafts activities with them than I am, because I run out of patience because I'm not doing it the right way.
But that makes sense though, because you're an artist and what you create, it's, you know.
Yeah.
Talking of work though, how do you juggle it? How do you have to keep your work life and your home life quite separate?
Well, yes. The last year, we knew that we were going to be taking the year off. So the year prior to taking the year off, I had to work extra hard, which was tough. Because I'd bring my son to school, and then I'd be home at dinner time and for bedtime, and then I'd go back to the studio. And it was, you know, I was working 18 hours a day while trying to fit in a couple of the basic home things every day. And then for the last basically 8 or 9 months, I have not been more than 10 feet from them for all 24 hours of the day. And I haven't really been working. I've been doing a little work with the film coming out and with that, the TED talk coming out, but I haven't found the right balance yet, and I don't know what that's going to be.
I imagine when you get back to your studio, it's that readjustment again.
Yeah, because I don't want to work as hard as I did work. I knew that a certain amount of work that needed to be completed before we left, and I got that done, but I don't ever want to work that hard again.
I guess sometimes you have to push yourself one way and realise that you don't know what you don't want.
Exactly.
So here we are, is the latest book. It is the latest book. You've just announced your next book as well.
Yeah, I did an Instagram live reading last night of the book that will follow on from The Fate of Fausto, which was the latest one. And so Here We Are was written for my son. The one that I read last night that will come out in October is What We'll Build, and it's written for my daughter.
So talk me through, first of all, Here We Are. How did you come up with the idea? Because I read somewhere that it was an idea that you wanted to create something for your son.
Yes. Well, no. I didn't realize it was going to be a book at the start. As I was walking around explaining to him, I just started writing down the things that I was saying. And at a certain point, I started writing him a letter. It's like, I'm going to give this letter to you when you're old enough to read. But then as global events started panning out the way that they were at that point, I thought more people would benefit from this. And actually, this might make a really good picture book. And so quite quickly, it went from being just a letter for my son to being a picture book, which I managed to get finished and was out by the time he was two. It's technically a non-fiction picture book because it's just a matter of explaining the Earth's position in the cosmos, environmental, social responsibility, and the idea of what it is to be a new parent or to be a new person. And that's how that came about. And the follow-on book, sort of the companion book for that, What We'll Build, is nothing like that at all. It's more of an abstract poem written for my daughter, just a list of these plans of things that we're going to build together, like these plans for our together future, it's called.
Oh, that's lovely.
So they're alike in sentiment, but not in any other way, really.
There was a gorgeous video that I found on your Instagram of your son seeing the book for the first time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. And he was like, it struck us how cognitive he was at that point. You know, we'd been reading him books and he'd obviously been aware of my work, but whenever we showed it to him, he was starting to make connections that we hadn't pointed out before because he hadn't seen them before. And that was in Belfast. I'd come back from HarperCollins in London with a dummy copy of the book. And we went to my parents-in-law's house and my dad was there and my wife was there. And I showed it to everybody. And it was only my wife thought to capture it on video.
It's beautiful. And it's interesting seeing his reaction, seeing the people there, I imagine might be family, and yours. Is there a different sense of pride, especially because it's a book dedicated to him? Is there a sense of pride that comes with that and an emotion that comes with it?
I don't know how to answer that, to be honest. Yes, I was proud of the book that I made, and I got a real emotional spur on knowing that he knew that it was for him. But I don't think it. I think there were two different things. I'm not sure that I was able to. It didn't make one feeling more powerful than the other, just that there was two separate things going on.
And has having children affected you creatively in what you want to say? Like, has it?
Maybe. And that's what I've been wondering, whether it's the having children that has changed it, or whether it's just how crazy the world got in the last couple of years and how obvious the impact of human activity on the planet was, and how upset I was by the anger of xenophobia, or whether I was noticing those things more because I was a parent. I can't quite pick them apart, but it's yes, definitely that there's a kind of an urgency and a favor to my work now, that whereas before it might have been a little more kind of just superfluous, like just for the sake of it or just for being funny, whereas now there's an actual kick and a point to it.
What parts of your own childhood would you love to pass on to your children?
I just think that the sense of innocence and not really worrying, and just the idea of having time to play and explore without being aware that everything was wrong and broken. My dad definitely has said that, yeah, they were concerned whenever they're raising us, but they just tried to shelter us from it to a degree. And so I think that's probably something I would want to pass on.
It's really interesting. You obviously grew up in a time in Belfast where there was lots going on, and now you've got young children and there's lots going on. Your parents dealt with it in a certain way, and I wonder how much of what your parents did those tools that you're going to use.
Yeah, and so I think a lot of it is you can't really decide how you're going to act. You just do, and it's gut instinct, and it comes from somewhere that's deep in there, and hopefully it's coming from a good place. because so much of parenting is reactionary.
Yeah. Oh, and even now, you know, thinking about, you know, you've been traveling around and you had big plans for a whole year of traveling, but at some point you're going to settle again. And are you wondering now where you settle?
Yes, but that's a different story.
Yeah. So I was wondering, has being a dad changed you?
Yes, it has. When we just had one son, people would say, can you remember what you did with your time before? And my wife and I remember answering going, yeah, we do very well.
I always find that a really funny question.
But now it's starting to slip away. It was like, well, what did we used to do? How would we have spent all this time? Like we barely get a conversation with each other. Yeah, of course, parenting changes you in myriad ways. It makes you question your own behavior, your own motivation, what it is that you're doing and what it is that you're imparting. But it gets rid of a lot of the faff as well, of just the sort of the spinning your wheels. And so I don't know if it's changed me so much as I've become a more concentrated version of myself now, because I have to be, both in terms of the effort that I have to spend on my own work and the where that effort is pointed.
I always find that before having kids, writing a book for me, it would take however long it took. You know, I could get up in the morning, get new pajamas on, mm-hmm. get writing. I could be writing until 11 o'clock at night. Nothing, you know, can faff around, be as productive or unproductive as I liked. Whereas now that there are kids in the equation, you've got to kind of shrink that all down and make sure that whatever time you're working, you're working, and you've got to factor in everything else around it.
Yeah.
So it makes time is important.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And we've been traveling, so we haven't really been working. But now we're here and we're in a small apartment. We're attempting to get a little bit of work done, and we're finding it tricky. So the jury's still out.
I'd be honest, I think working during this whole thing is going to be incredibly hard.
Yep, it is.
Just got to roll with
it. I do. I went back and forth. Whether I was envious or sympathetic of my friends who were on their own, because they got so much time for themselves, and I think I've come down on the reality that I'm actually sympathetic for them, because yes, as much free time as they get, it's the connections with other people, and is as I said, is one of the most important things that we have.
Yeah, because I think even though, you know, there might be times where it's frustrating, dinner times might not go as planned, there might be bickering in my house, you still get that hug. Mm-hmm. You still get that love that's coming back, and like, so that love is always there. Whereas I think actually if you were on your own, I think I'd miss that physical connection.
Yeah.
So I wrote a book this year that was a series of letters on motherhood. And I literally wrote to myself, my husband, my own parents, my children, different body parts. And I was wondering if you could write a letter on being a dad, who would you write to and what would you say?
Ooh, I mean, just off the top of my head, I would probably write it to my son. And I'd probably try and impart some of the wisdom that my own dad gave me. And I'll never forget, whenever we told him that we were going to have our first son, not his first grandkid, and I said, go on, Dad, lay it on me. What's the secret? You raised four good boys in a turbulent time, in a turbulent place. What is the secret? And his initial reaction was, oh, I don't know. I was making it up as I went along. But then he was dropping me to Dublin Airport from Belfast, which is like a 2-hour drive. And just before I got out, he said, you know, I've been thinking about that. And actually, I do think I have something. He says that just be consistent. Like whatever you feel, however you feel, just feel that and be consistent at that. It was like, it's a turbulent world out there. And I just tried to be a safe harbor. So you'd always know how I would feel.
Oh, that's lovely. Has your relationship changed with your dad since having kids?
No, I've always had a tremendous relationship with my dad. And it's, yeah, if anything, it's got deeper and strengthened, but it hasn't changed in any way.
It's interesting as well, because obviously now we're all away from each other and apart. So my life now is on Zoom calls or FaceTime with my family. And in a way, I feel like we're actually talking to each other a lot more because we're forced to sit and look at a computer,
yeah,
rather than actually sometimes if you are with each other, there's other stuff going on, there's something on the TV, you'll eat, like there's always so much noise around that. Whereas actually being away from each other, you get that focused time. And I wonder actually, because you were living in New York and away from them, have you had that sort of that direct chat for quite some time?
No, actually, I'm always very bad at the on the telephone, because if I'm not looking, I'll tend to not concentrate that much. I just don't really like spending time on the phone. But because there's no choice these days, I do find it easier to do a visual, like a Zoom call or a FaceTime call, than to just speak on the phone. And I do try to do that periodically with friends and with family. And my dad and my three brothers will every day will do a FaceTime call all together. Not for very long, just sort of checking in with each other, but it's every day.
So I finish every podcast by asking you three questions.
Okay.
Well, asking you to complete three sentences.
Okay.
So being a dad means... I didn't say they were going to be easy.
Less time for me.
Since having children, I...
care more about the future of society.
And I'm happy when...
When I'm working and my children are laughing.
No, there's nothing like laughter. Makes everything fine.
Yeah.
And more info on where people can find Here We Are Now.
Here We Are, the film can be watched on Apple TV. And then Here We Are, the book can be bought in any good bookshops. But support independent bookshops because they need you now more than ever.
Yeah, they really do. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.